Hello and welcome to another Danger Zone episode of Cineblokes. I'm Benjamin Baker.
I'm Caelan Burrows.
And we have just come from the cinema and we have seen Top Gun Maverick. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, the film is real. It has been released. You can actually see this film. I know it's very hard to believe that you can witness this movie.
Yeah, but you can. In only, what, 3 years late, I think. Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, look, 30 years overdue. And then 3 years delayed in a pandemic so that Tom Cruise can make sure that everybody could see him in all its glory on the big screen.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, films, they're just trying to set records these days. And I feel like the new record that everyone's trying to break is, how long can we wait from the original film to make a sequel?
I think Top Gun has them all beat.
Interestingly enough, the director of this film also directed Tron Legacy.
Yeah.
Speaking of waiting too long for a sequel.
Maybe that's his thing. Maybe that's just what he's into. He just watches old films and he's like, hey, that's 30 years old. We should make that again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he does fine at it, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, yes, this film has been very, very delayed. And a lot of that is attributed to Tom Cruise, who just demanded that this film not only be released in theaters only at first, but he wanted to make sure that, you know, more people could see the film in theaters. And so he waited until this is the power of Tom Cruise, by the way. I don't know. This is probably too much information, but Tom Cruise basically held the studio hostage and told Paramount that they were not allowed to release the film until people were allowed to go to the theaters in droves. Yeah. That's why it sat on the shelf for so long.
And time will tell if he made the right choice.
Yes, yes. So we're going to talk about the film. No spoilers up top, obviously. We will let you know when we're going to talk about spoilers. So we'll just kind of break things down, spoiler free. And then, we'll let you know when it's time to spoil the film.
Yep. So directed by Joseph Kosinski, who, as previously stated, directed Tron Legacy, also directed Oblivion with Tom, and Only the Brave, which I've never seen.
There was a movie called Only the Brave?
Only the Brave in 2017 with... With people. There's some people in it.
Sure.
People that you might even know, like Josh Brolin, isn't it?
Really?
Miles Teller. So probably likes working with the same people.
Okay, all right, that makes sense.
Jeff Bridges.
What?
Yeah.
Where have I been?
I think it's based on a true story as well, about some firefighters who go to protect the town from a wildfire, something like
yes.
that.
Yes.
Only you know the Brave.
Yes. Yes, I do know this film. I haven't seen it, but now that you say that, I remember watching this trailer and thinking, wow, all these people are in this movie.
Hey, Jennifer Connelly was in that as well.
Wow. All right.
Very weird.
Okay, just out there calling in favors.
Yeah, everything's coming together in Top Gun Maverick, I guess. So, and also this film had quite a bit of writers on it as well. Just in the credits alone, there's more than really deserve to be there. You've got Jim Cash and Jack Epps Jr., who get the based on characters created by credit.
Right.
Then you've got Peter Craig and Justin Marks, who get story by credit. And then you've got Aaron Kruger, Eric Warren Singer, and Christopher McQuarrie for the screenplay credits. So right.
God, that is a lot of people.
That is so many people.
That is so many people with their hands in a single project.
And I know what you're thinking, Benjamin. You're thinking, but what does it mean?
I am thinking that, yeah.
Well, it means something. Christopher McQuarrie has written quite a few films that are good. He wrote The Usual Suspects.
Ooh, you know? I do like that film.
He wrote Edge of Tomorrow.
I do like Live, Die, Repeat,
depending on, you know, when you've seen it.
Or depending on which Blu-ray you get.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty much, at this point, he's Tom Cruise's personal screenwriter, because he's written Jack Reacher, he's written Edge of Tomorrow, he's written Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, Mission Impossible Fallout, the upcoming Mission Impossibles, some future Tom Cruise project that don't have a title yet. So The Mummy is all, it's all coming up, Tom.
Yeah, all right.
That's Valkyrie. I didn't know you wrote Valkyrie, which also had Tom Cruise in it.
Wow, you're right. He really is the personal writer of Tom Cruise. That makes it sound like he just lives in Tom Cruise's house, like in a bungalow or something. And Tom Cruise just wakes up and he's like, hey, I want to make this film. And then Chris has to sit there and write it.
Look,
that's what it feels like.
I'm sure they got him set up better than that. He's probably got a cell at the Scientology Celebrity Center, and that's, they let him come out and play to write a script.
I've never toured the facility, but I would imagine that he might just be in a glass case with a typewriter. So if you want to tour it and you get far enough in the Dianetics, you can actually watch him work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know much about Scientology. That's just a guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's all made up. So, and then we've got Eric Warren Singer, who not as many writing credits, also doesn't appear to have worked with Tom on anything. He wrote something called Tornado Lane, which was a short film back in 91. Okay. He wrote American Hustle.
Okay, only
the Brave.
Okay, Tom.
So the director was calling favors, I guess. Yeah. he wrote this. Hey, he's also apparently writing Now You See Me 3, which didn't know that was a thing that was happening. But
I'm going to be honest. I wish you did not know that fact.
I'm sorry that I do.
That hurts, and that's a rabbit hole. I am going to have to go down, but I don't want to go down.
Well, if you think that hurts, then just wait, because we've got our third writer, Aaron Kruger, who I guess would be responsible for the sillier parts of this film. And when I tell you what he's written, you'll be like, yeah, that makes sense. So aside from, looks like he started out writing some horror films. He wrote Scream 3. He wrote The Ring, The Ring 2, The Skeleton Key, The Brothers Grimm. But he also wrote Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, Transformers, Dark of the Moon, Transformers, Age of Extinction. And Dumbo.
Wow. That does put this into rather harsh perspective. Wow. Those are not credits you want to your name. That is not how you want to be remembered.
Yeah, so as far as I'm concerned, any of the bits of the film where I was like, I didn't care for that, I feel like he was responsible.
That's good. Look, we've got a name, and I'm sure you've got a face. So we can attribute that to anything that we don't like about this film. It's on that guy. Yep. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with putting the blame on one single person.
But I mean, overall, what do you think of the writing and directing of the film?
You know, so there's a couple of things here. So I think directing-wise, I thought it was directed very, very well. I think, you know, being paired with Tom Cruise and, you know, having worked with him on previous projects, it's very clear that their relationship dictates a lot of the things that, you know, kind of highlight the things that Tom Cruise really likes about the characters that he's done, about what he wants from film. So you can kind of feel that pairing. I'm one of the few people that actually adore Oblivion. I find that film to be very, very good. And so I think anybody that's ever worked with Tom in a way that Tom feels is complimentary enough to bring them back on a project, that's a big deal. And I definitely see that chemistry here. And it felt very much like he understood he understood what was being asked, right? He got what we were trying to do and the type of film we were trying to make. So directing-wise, I thought it was done very well. I think writing-wise, honestly, I thought it was written pretty well. There were definitely some weak spots, but a lot of that is just attributed to being a basic retread of Top Gun. So there's some inescapable tropes and things that you just kind of have to do if you're going to make a film like this. But yeah, I think overall, all the people behind the camera did an incredible job in something that, frankly, I don't think very many people asked for. This very much feels like a passion project from all of them. And the fact that they even deliver on a small level and a large level, that's a big deal. So I thought it was done very well.
Yeah, I think this film, ever since Tom started doing his own stunts, I think he's an adrenaline junkie now. And yes. So
yes,
he was like, hey, I've got an idea. Let's make Top Gun 2. And then you're going to pay me to actually fly fighter jets.
Yeah. And not just me, every single person that's supposed to be featured in a fighter jet also has to have their flight school paid for, because they're not allowed in the film unless they understand what it's like to be a pilot.
Yeah. And I mean, look, that I think it pays off, really, because the film does. It looks great. It absolutely all the flying stuff looks phenomenal, because most of it is done in camera.
Yes.
So it looks really, really good that way. I do think that the writing could have been better. It was fine. Like you said, it sort of retells the story of Top Gun in a sense. I mean, you're going to get a lot of the same beats that you do from the first film. There's obvious changes, right? But there was a couple of places where I was just like, oh, this feels lazy. There's a thing I can't talk about until we get to spoilers, but there was something right at the start of the movie that sort of, as soon as it happened, it was played up for humor. And it was fine. It was funny. But as soon as it happened, I was like, well, there's no stakes for me for the rest of the film.
Yeah, right. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think you do. I feel like you might be on the same page when we talk about it in spoilers. But yeah I was just sort of like, well, that was silly. And, you know, while most of the film isn't silly, to me, it sort of lacked the edge that the first film had. And I mean, that's, I don't know if it's apples to apples, because I mean, the other film was made so long ago.
Right.
That, you know, you're not going to get your, there's a lot of things you're not going to see in a film today. You're not going to get your gratuitous sex scenes. And I'm fine. I didn't need that.
Yeah. Right.
But it's just, you know, the original was a product of its time. And so you're going to see things differently here. And I don't know. The finale for me felt sort of, it was fine. Like it was a fine finale, but I don't know. I just felt like it was lacking a bit. But overall, I enjoyed the film.
Yeah, I would agree to a certain extent. I think, you know, the film does an incredible job in visual effects, which obviously we're going to talk about. So action and visual effects that we can kind of start addressing, because I think it transitions well. So for me, excuse me. So for me, I do feel like what they might lack in solid, competent storytelling, they make up for with just incredible, just mind-blowing visuals, honestly. Whatever Dianetics Tom Cruise is on, where he just demands that everything be done in real time and there are very little digital effects, it is a valid argument, because it is hard not to be completely invested in what's happening. But I do feel like there are some lazy things that kind of happen here. And there are definitely some moments where I was like, oh, well, that's dumb. It's just, you know, just overall. And when you talk about the climax, for me, I do honestly feel like there's, and we'll get into it in spoilers, so I'm not going to reveal too much here, but there are definitely parts of that third act where it felt like it was from a completely different film. Like, they just inserted a concept that they had previously, and they were like, oh, well, we can't use this in the beginning, but, you know, we'll just tack it on to the end and just basically make a different movie that happens to conclude the one that we've already made. That's how it felt for me. So this film had a lot of ups and downs. It does feel like a very big roller coaster. And I do think that it's not a perfect film by any means. And I think that there are things and flaws in the storytelling and just overall, just as a narrative film. But this is about as good as you could get for a sequel that is long overdue, that no one asked for, that just kind of taps into something that most of these other ones don't. I think they utilize the nostalgia really well, where they don't rely on it, but it is included, and they are trying to tell even if they're trying to tell the same story as the original, they're trying to tell it in a new way. And, you know, when you talk about sequels, it's, you know, most sequels don't do well. And I think this one does more. It gets more right than it gets wrong, in my opinion overall. So,
yeah, I mean, look, it's serviceable enough. And, you know, since we're addressing, you know, the visuals and stuff like that, all the jet fighting and stuff like that, it's such a visual feast, and the yes. cast is likable enough that it keeps you going through yeah. the movie. You can sort of forgive some of the lacking areas of the story just because everything you're watching is just so exciting. I mean, it really did kind of channel the original film, because there's not a lot of movies made about dogfighting, and I don't know why anymore. Maybe just because of the artificial nature of CG, it's just not as exciting. I don't know. I don't pretend to understand it, but it's not a big market. And so this sort of really captured something that I think the original film did very well. So
yeah, I would agree with you. And when we talk action and special effects right now, which I think we should just touch on it briefly, and then we'll move on to casting. But yeah, I just. Visually, if you're looking for an incredible, immersive, mind-blowing experience of just visuals and cinematography and practical effects and aerial combat, that real or not, whether or not the actual Navy or Air Force does anything like that, it almost doesn't even matter, because this film is visually unmatched. I was blown away by some of the action set pieces that they were able to create, and the way that the cinematographer, I forgot his name, but he's like an award-winning cinematographer, and he the things that he is able to capture in the way that it's all framed is just, it's absolutely stunning. It almost doesn't even matter whether the story is good or not, because if you're just looking to have your eyes be treated to just visually incredible immersive experiences, this movie has that in spades, and I think most of it makes up for whatever's lacking in the actual story.
Yeah, Claudio Miranda is the name of the cinema.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I agree. Again, the film looks beautiful, and they just completely nail all the jet fighting stuff like that. And again, knowing that the actors are really there, really, you know, obviously they're not really shooting each other down and things like that, but it's right. just, you know, they're really flying. And so you get a lot of those great camera shots inside the cockpit where you can see the terrain and you can see the effect of the G's on the actor's face. And it just, it's yeah. so, it's almost like to the point where they're not even filming a movie. They're just filming real life at this point, you know? Right.
yeah, no, absolutely. And what is great about it is, it's almost impossible to tell what's real and what's not. Yeah. And that is a very big achievement, especially when we've seen in recent time of, you know, people trying to leverage a lot of the digital effects to not great avail, to be honest. Even ones that have millions and millions and millions of dollars in budget, you know, it all looks kind of shoddy and a bit fake. And this one is just, you can, even if they're in a simulator, you can tell that they've had legitimate experiences in the air in the way that they're acting. So even if some of it is them just sitting in a, you know, makeshift cockpit and it's all simulated and they've got digital effects around them, you can tell that they've done it for real and they're reacting in real time because they've had that experience before. And that absolutely pays off, and that sells whatever it is that isn't real. It is almost impossible to tell what is and what isn't. And that gets top marks for me when it comes to visuals and action and all that.
And it's done in a way that it's going to hold up. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you can watch the original today and all the jets and fighting and dogfighting and stuff like that still holds up. And this film's going to be the same way in 30 or 40 years time. You can watch this film and be like, yeah, that looks good because of the way they did it. So
yeah. And it doesn't matter how good the technology gets. You're going to look back on this and be like, well, yeah, this still looks good. And that's amazing. So, yeah, let's talk casting. Obviously starring the immortal Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's his name, but I've just decided that he's an immortal.
Yeah. I mean, they sort of spoil that with the name of the film, really.
That's true.
You could have called it anything else, but when you call it Top Gun Maverick, you know he's the star. And
yes. And he definitely is. So it gives us supporting characters, Miles Teller, in an unrecognizable look, because I don't know if you've ever seen anything Miles Teller is in, but he is not a shredded, tall fighter pilot with nothing to lose and a chip on his shoulder. So good marks on you, mate, for doing the Christian Bale and being like, yeah, I'm going to go from dopey nobody to shredded volleyball beach man.
I mean, everyone in this film was just ripped.
This is basically the MCU of Top Gun.
And actually, I will say this about Miles Teller. I mean, the man's a great actor as it is. But that talk about perfect casting. I believe that Miles Teller is actually related to Anthony Daniels, Anthony Edwards.
Absolutely.
Who played Goose in the original film. Like, they look related.
Yeah. And the fact that they did it with basically all they did, but they were like, look, Miles, I just need you to be absolutely ripped, pretend that you're tall, and grow a mustache. And he was like, okay, yeah, great. And then he looks exactly like he is Goose's son. I've just decided right now in my mind that's a fact.
I thought his call sign was a bit silly, since Goose was his dad, so he's got to be sort of a silly bird as well.
I think most of their call signs are pretty stupid, but that's just me. It's hard to beat Maverick and Iceman. Those are hard ones to take back.
Yeah, except when you're trying to blatantly copy them and then you get Rooster and Hangman, which is like, come on, especially when Hangman isn't just a copy of Iceman.
And he's also like Iceman times 11 because he is a twat. Just like, you don't, at least with Iceman, you kind of sympathize with him a bit. And you're kind of like, oh, yeah, you'll come around. But this guy, you're like, no, you're a twat. From beginning to end, you deserve everything that befalls you, mate.
Yeah. I mean, the actor did good. Glenn Powell is his name. And he was fine. He was, he had that same sort of, like, chemistry with Miles Teller that Val Kilmer and Tom Cruise did in the original, will they, won't they make out at some point during this film?
Yeah, right. There's definitely that, kinetic energy of like, oh, they hate each other because, they want to shag.
Although I sort of feel like everyone had that in this film. There was not one scene that went by where I thought that it didn't matter. Male, female, female. It just... everyone that was on camera looked like they was about to have sex with someone else on camera.
There was a lot of doomy eyes going on there from everyone to the point where, because, it also stars Jennifer Connelly as, Maverick's love interest by Tom Cruise.
With the most made up name in the history of made up names. The name is Penny Benjamin.
Yeah, no, it's not. No,
Penny,
it's not.
Benjamin.
That's not your name, miss. to the point where they even address their looks, like the actual glances. They have whole conversations about the way that they look at each other. Like, that is how much people give shag me eyes throughout this whole film. I was shocked it didn't end in a giant orgy. We got close on the beach, there's definitely, look, not to spoil anything because you've seen it a bit in the trailers, but they do kind of do a lot of the shot for shot, beat for beat type of things in the original, and one of them is a completely shirtless ripped dude sweaty on the beach playing a game. I'm actually pretty shocked that this just did not turn into a porno parody of Top Gun. The way they were all loving each other on there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everyone did a good job. There's way too many pilots for us to name. Most of them don't really have much to do. But I mean, everyone that they focus on does a good job.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say on this, and then we can move on. But for me, I was very impressed with the way that they made us kind of invest and care about some of the main characters. You know, all the people, all the people that we mentioned, and there's a couple of others, but you know, a lot of times when they kind of introduce this new cast of younger characters, you kind of just roll your eyes and you're like, oh, all right, here comes the typecast. And well, yeah, there's a bit of that. Overall, I felt very invested in them. It you know, you in the way that, you know, Maverick in the film feels responsible for this group that, you know, have to kind of go on the special mission. You also feel for them. You're not just like, oh, these are a bunch of nameless faces that happen to be hot and I don't really care whether or not they live or die. I think the film does do a good job in kind of making you invest in them as much as Maverick invests in them. And that is something rare for a sequel like this, when you introduce a younger cast to kind of replace some of the older characters from the original.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, shall we rate it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, you want to go first?
Yeah, I could go first. I think I might have enjoyed this film more than you did. Because I actually really enjoyed it. So I am gonna give this one. Oh God, what do I want to rate this as? I'm going to rate this, you know what? I'm going to go 4 out of 5, absolutely ripped abs on a beach. Cause there were far more of them in this one than there ever was in the original Top Gun. And as I was watching it, I was just like, wow, I really need to stop eating just in general, and go lift something because I'm a sham. This is, yeah. So yeah, 4 out of 5 ripped abs on a beach.
Right. I'm going to go. You're right. You did enjoy it a little bit more than me. I'm going with 3.75 missed opportunities for pilot cameos. Huh? Where was Merlin? Right. Where's Wolfman? No yeah. Slider? Hollywood? Anyone? Sundown? Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. All right. Fair.
And I realize now that is a spoiler, but. none of those people make any appearances.
Yeah, so. I think you might have been the only one rooting for them. But now that you mention it, yeah, we need a Merlin. We need the purple helmet and stars and all of it. Just,
yeah, I mean, what's Tim Robbins doing these days? He could have shown up, you know?
I'm going to be honest. I don't know that he would make it through flight school. It's just a guess, but I don't know that he would have made it.
You know, what's Michael Ironside doing? Could have come back as Jester. You know,
imagine.
I mean, I know he's older than dirt at this point, but still, you know.
And look, not all of them are immortal and bought into the power of Dianetics. So some of them actually age.
That's true.
So yeah, that's a folly for them.
Yeah.
Gotta get just on that Scientology, man.
If they were all Scientologists, they could have all reprised their roles looking like they stopped aging 10 years after they made the original.
Yep, yep, absolutely.
But they didn't. So yeah, anyway.
Can't all be Tom Cruise.
Nope. Especially Kelly McGillis, which is why she was not invited back.
Yeah, spoiler alert. There's a reason Jennifer Connelly is in this film. Because not her.
Because Hollywood does not believe in aging.
No, they do not.
And especially look, if you're a lady, they frown on that very much.
And listen, I'm not here, just before we even get into spoilers, I just want everyone to know we're not shaming her at
No,
all.
We're shaming Hollywood, if anything.
Yeah, we're shaming Hollywood, and we're shaming Tom Cruise for not aging a day over the original film. Because if you've got a man that looks 10 years younger, even though 30 years have passed since the original, and then you have a woman who is just aging like a normal human being, that's hard to pair with. It's just tough. So you just go out and find a younger actress, and that's a Hollywood thing and the power of Dianetics thing. So
plus, I mean, she was older than him in the original film, so
yes
it would make sense, but we you can't have that. So you bring in, you get your ringer, you get your you get your Jennifer Connellys to come in, who But anyway, that's not the point. Anyway,
no, it's not.
Let's move on. Let's get to some spoilers, shall we?
All right, let's do it. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right.
Spoiler song.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So look, if you don't want Top Gun Maverick spoiled for you, you know, bugger off and come back when you've seen the film. If you don't care, that's fine. Stick around. No big deal. But we are going to spoil it. We're going to talk about everything and anything that we think is pertinent to the film and not give any regard to whether or not you've seen it or not. So this is your last chance.
Yeah, we're going to spoil everything, including the fact that it's basically just Top Gun all over again.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and start right out the gate, eh?
Sorry. Yeah, spoilers.
No, you're absolutely right. This film is basically a shot-for-shot remake. Look, they do some different things, but for the most part, it is beat-for-beat, shot-for-shot, a remake of Top Gun.
Yeah. So what's very interesting is that the film opens almost identical, down to the point that they even did something that had me scratching my head, because I was like, that don't make no sense. That man's dead. He's been dead for a long time. So way back in the day, back in the time of the original Top Gun, there was a pairing. Jerry Bruckheimer and Don Simpson used to be a producing duo. And they produced a bunch of big hits from back in the day. You know, you've got your Beverly Hills Cops, you've got your Top Guns, your Days of Thunder, right? And yeah. So it would be like a Simpson-Bruckheimer production. Well, I think their pairing actually ended before Don Simpson died, but that man died back in 1996. So the fact that this film opened up and it said Don Simpson / Jerry Bruckheimer, I was like, say what now? Which was clearly just a nod to the original film, but I was just very confused. I was like, maybe they just chopped out the opening from the original Top Gun and just put some new credits over the front.
Yeah, you know, well, it does feel like that a bit, because the whole opening of the film is exactly that. It is literally a shot for shot remake of everything that happened, like down to the soundtrack. We get the Danger Zone in there. We get all of it. It's all there.
Yeah, which was actually, you know, I will say was rather nice, because it gets you pumped. As soon as Danger Zone starts playing, you're like, yeah, I don't care what's coming up next. Let's do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There was definitely a big part of me that was like, oh, yeah, no, I'm in. You don't have to sell me. I've got it. I'm in. Let's go.
Yeah. And then we get to the silly business. So for me, well, and I'm not saying this ruined anything, but I did feel like after this moment happened, I was like, well, there's no stakes. Because the first film took everything very seriously about, you know, with the pilots. And sure, it's all larger than life. And, you know, you wouldn't actually, when you're out of fuel, take off again to go try to help guide a struggling pilot in. You know what I mean? Like, that was right. A little bit silly, but they treat it with such seriousness that you believe that they could all die in what they're doing.
Right.
And this opens with Tom being a test pilot who needs to break Mach 10 or whatever. And he does. And then he keeps pushing it. And then they show this jet break up in atmosphere going Mach 10. And it just cuts away and to Tom showing up at a diner in rural America, just being like, where am I? All for a comedic effect. And don't get me wrong, it was funny. But at the same time, I was like, all right, well, he's not going to die. There's nothing. Yeah. That was the equivalent of Indiana Jones surviving an atomic explosion in a refrigerator. And so when we got to the end, I never felt like anyone was in real danger. Because of that one moment at the start of the film.
I would give you that. I think it was more, for me anyway, and I agree. We're right on the same moment, because I remember when I watched that and I was like, why is he still alive? It's just, I was very confused. I know that they were just going for the joke and they were going for the laugh. But there was a big part of me that was just like, no, that man is dead. I don't care who you are. No Scientology can make you survive going Mach 10 in a stealth plane that literally deteriorates in the atmosphere And you just are like, oh yeah, no, I'm fine. I just need a glass of water, mate. And I'll be good. That's not how any of that works. So yeah, there is a big part of that where you're like, well, yeah, he's going to make it. You know, I did feel that with that. I was actually rather surprised that a lot of the younger cast made it through, because if anything else, I thought at least one of them was going to die. That the whole time I was just waiting for one of them to die. But they don't. Yeah, you know, obviously we're in spoilers, so it doesn't matter. But and you know, they do a pretty good job in teasing their deaths. But yeah, there was definitely a part of you where you were like, well, I know Maverick makes it through the end now. And you learn that very early on.
Yeah, well, and that's what was sort of like when I was complaining about the third act. It was you expect, or you and I even said when they launched the mission, not all the pilots could go with. And so you leaned over to me and you was like, hey, what's your bet? Something's going to happen and all the other reserve pilots are going to have to get in the air, so we have a big dogfight. Yeah. And I was like, yeah. And then that didn't happen.
And that's so let's just talk about that, because I think the third act is really where things, it's such a strange third act of a film for me, because visually there's no comparison. This is visually one of the most stunning third act action set pieces I think I've ever seen on film. It is just absolutely mind-blowing, the things that they were able to do and accomplish on film. So there is that. But not only is it basically a Star Wars remake of the Assault on the Death Star from literally the beginning of this whole mission, like even when they're doing the plans, like my bird was with us, so she even leaned over and she was like, why is this the Death Star? Where isn't he just Luke Skywalker trying? Are they going to talk about, you know, shooting stuff on Tatooine? Like, what is happening right now? Because it's very much like that. But
a trench run followed by blasting an exhaust port.
Yeah. That needs to be a miracle shot, right? Nobody can achieve this.
Yep.
So visually, it's absolutely stunning. But I agree with you. There are some huge missed opportunities here because, you know, as much as you don't want cliches, this is a film that's basically an entire cliche from start to finish. So why are we deviating from any of that? The fact that you bench the hotshot and, you know, the guy that's going to leave his team behind, you know, you've got to give him a chance to go in and sacrifice himself. You've got to give him a chance to go in and, you know, work with a team. And that's the whole premise of the second act, right? The whole narrative of act two is he has to teach them how to work as a team. And then that doesn't even matter, because
they all played football on the beach, so they're a team now.
Right. But the point of the naked beach sex scene that should have been an orgy is so that after they're all done shagging, they can go up in the air and be a team. That's the whole point.
No, and we'd never get to see it.
We never get that, ever. And it's a huge missed opportunity, and the buddy cop thing that happens in this third act, where like, so what ends up happening is they go through this whole assault and Maverick sacrifices himself to save Rooster, right? But obviously Maverick is not going to die. We've already established that in the first 5 minutes of the film. So he survives, and then Rooster is like, well, I'm gonna go save him. And then he gets shot out of the sky, and then they both just end up in the forest, and then it becomes like a pilot heist film of like buddy cops. And you know what my biggest problem with this is? Their chemistry as a buddy cop duo is fantastic. Like, I loved it, but I was like, where was this the whole time? Like, why are we doing this now? Because this now feels like a completely different film. And it bothered me a lot, because I was very much like, I would like more of this, please. But well, not at the tail end of the film when it doesn't make any sense.
And also, that's where things should have switched on, because throughout the film, they're practicing for this trench run. So we've seen it. We've seen them go through the motions of this multiple times. So what needs to happen to make a film exciting is that when they actually do it, things need to go wrong. Yes. So that it deviates from everything we've already seen. Well, that don't really happen. They succeed, but then a couple of them get shot down. So what needs to happen to make the film exciting is, sure, have them steal a jet But when they do, reinforcements show up. And that way you scramble all the jets of the other pilots that we haven't got to see do anything.
Yeah.
And then they all, like you said, they have that moment where now it's like, oh, these are advanced fighters that we can't possibly take on. We've got to work like a team and do some daring stuff and prove that we're the best of the best. But no, these apparently, you know, the jets that the fighters are normally flying are not as good as these new jets that the baddies have. But yet Tom takes down two of them in an old jet that nobody flies anymore. And it's just like, okay, so, you know, we could have had some great fun here, but instead we didn't. I mean, it was fine. Don't get me wrong. The stuff that we got was okay, but just I just felt like I needed more from everyone.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, you know, this whole, you know, Maverick is, you know, he's very much Maverick, and so most of his career, like there's a reason he's still a captain and not an admiral. And so, you know, the whole, you know, insubordination, you know, kind of doing what you need to do to get the job done, almost a Mission Impossible type thing where like the whole of the mission is like, no, you've got to stay on course. And then, you know, he doesn't stay on course, but he gets the mission done.
Yeah.
You feel like that's the message and you almost wish that. So as this is all going on, the whole time I was waiting for Hangman to just pull his hatch down, put his mask on, and just fly off the aircraft carrier without any kind of authorization. Like, that's what I was hoping for, especially when Maverick goes down and Rooster is like, no, I'm not going to comply with orders. It would have made way more sense if all of them declined their orders and went in, and then we get to see the dogfighting. And like you're saying, we get to see them all work as a team to save Maverick because Maverick taught them how to work with their instincts, how to do what they need to do to get the job done and survive and work as a team and save their teammates. You could have had a whole redemption arc for Hangman. You know, there's so many different things that you could have done to put that all together. And it's just a huge missed opportunity. So as great as it looks, and as much as I love the little buddy cop banter between those two, I liked all of that, but it does feel like there was a lot lacking because as cliche as everything that I just said sounds, it fits better as a conclusion for this film.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, and then of course there was the sort of tacked on romance that felt like a tacked on romance.
yeah, that one I did not like. I think...
Go ahead.
No, I think we're probably both in agreement. So
yeah, I was just going to say, like, it was unnecessary. You could have spent more time with the pilots and Tom developing the pilots because there was a fair few pilots in this film, and we don't really get to spend a lot of time with any of them. You know, even Hangman, who is very much the Val Kilmer Iceman of the film,
sure,
we barely get to know at all. We just get his caricature, his, you know.
Yeah, right. His over the top, I'm a bully.
Yeah, and that's about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And you know, it felt tacked on in the first one. And yeah, all right, get it. I'll get it. It's an 80s movie. You've got to have a love interest, regardless of whether or not it makes any sense whatsoever. And here, it does feel a bit crammed in. And I felt like the film comes to a screeching halt whenever we start engaging with this love story. And that's not a knock on Jennifer Connelly. I think she is a wonderful actress. I've always loved the things that she's done. She's absolutely phenomenal in general. But this just feels very tacked on and very much, you know, kind of a must by the studio. Like, not something that actually adds to the story, but they can't have a Top Gun story without a love interest. And so they just kind of cram her in there as being somewhat important, but you never really know who she is. You never really know why she's important to Maverick. Yeah, it's not, none of it makes a whole lot of sense, and it does just feel really crammed in. And honestly, you could have deleted all of it from the story and everything would have moved on exactly the same. Like, it doesn't change anything for anyone.
Yeah, and who came up with the name Penny Benjamin? It's like, it's awful.
Look, as somebody who is named Benjamin, I find it to be a horrible insult to my name. I don't approve of it. Bad on you, writers.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't really got much else to say
I think aside from a few missteps, I'm going to go on a limb and say that this is definitely one of the better attempts of trying to capitalize on something that's a bit too old to capitalize on, but you're going to go for it anyway. But this definitely lives up to a sequel. It's definitely one of those ones that I think will stand the test of time better than most. And as much as it does that, I think is probably wrong, and I think I would fix and I would correct, it gets more right than it does wrong. And that's saying a lot for a film like this. I would actually put this up there with some of the better sequels over the ages, because it really is. The good is really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, to the point where I would watch a third film if it didn't feature Tom Cruise. If it just focused on all these other pilots doing something, and we got some of the same shots and things that we did, I don't think we would, though, because a rumor is they paid $11,000 an hour to fly these jets.
Oh, my God. These
so if this film don't make more money than God, I don't know what's I don't think we're getting Top Gun free.
I was telling my bird, because she was like, I think they're trying to hand it off to, you know, Miles Teller. And I was like, no, they're not, because there is no way this film gets made without Tom Cruise. They tried it with Mission Impossible, and they were like, Hawkeye, would you like to be the new Ethan Hunt? And then Ethan Hunt was like, wait, no, you can't do that. And he came back in and took the reins back. And everyone was just like, yeah, all right, this feels better. This is much better than Jeremy Renner taking on the role. So
I think you're getting your spy franchises mixed up. That was Jason Bourne.
No, he did both.
Well, he was in it, but he wasn't like, he didn't take over as Ethan Hunt. He was just in the
mate.
Film.
No, mate, that was not the intention. I have rewatch whatever it is. What is it? Name of that one? Ghost Protocol. Yeah, rewatch Ghost Protocol, and you tell me that is not intentionally trying to hand the reins over to Jeremy Renner.
I mean, I'll give it a rewatch, but I can't make no promises.
Yeah, that was absolutely the vibe, and then, you know, the movie did well, and Tom Cruise is like, wait, no, hold on. You mean I could just do crazy stunts and get paid for it? Jeremy, take a back seat, mate. You're not even going out in the field. Just hang back. I've got this.
So what you're saying is Jeremy Renner has failed to take over two separate spy franchises. Yes. That's what you're saying.
Yes. All I'm right. saying Hollywood has a misplaced faith in Jeremy Renner for taking over spy franchises. Yes, absolutely. That is what I'm saying, and I'm sticking to it.
All right.
Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Cineblokes. I'm Benjamin Baker.
Yeah. Code name, Moneybags.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that your call sign?
That's what it's going to be now. Yeah.
Benjamin Moneybags Baker.
I like it.
And I'm Kalen Badger Burrows.
Perfect. And we will see you after the next film.